Okay. We are now commencing with the Central Committee meeting. Dr. Glazer, how many Central Committee members do we have? Please. Robert is going to read the names of those who are officially on the list of Central Committee members.
Dean Ahmad, Lorenzo and Susan Gassignano, myself, Michael Linder, George Reynolds, Gerald Schneider, Stuart Sims, Scott Spencer, Penny Spezio, Eric Glick, Richard Davis, Paul Durgas, Louis Dabowski, Robert Johnson, Jack Jones, Ronald Keane, Darlene Nicholas, and Tim Salt.
Is there anybody's name who is not mentioned who wants to be or thinks they should be a Central Committee member? All right, very good. So how many do we have?
The Central Committee is myself, Mark Rannis, and Tony Spezio. And according to that, we have 19 Central Committee members present out of a total of 25, and there are no proxies presented.
Thank you. The minutes, I distributed the minutes by email from the last Central Committee meeting, which was held at the summer picnic at Arvin Boers in Chevy Chase. Are there any amendments, adjustments, corrections, or questions to be made? Hearing none, so moved. The Treasurer's Report, Mr. Linder. Your Treasurer's Report should be on the opposite side of the agenda.
Okay.
And thank you for having done that.
And as far as there are no outstanding bills that I know of.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Linder regarding the Treasurer's Report?
I have a question. If the income was greater than the expenses, but the opening balance is greater than the
total. I know that actually the general camera should be, I put in an extra 7 and 31, 37.
For where?
Well, very bottom one. $3,100.
I was trying to do the calculation, but
well, it still went down there.
Well, that's what I was trying. I noticed that the other day when I was doing it, that I did this real fast at the end. I said, where was the money spent? But I said, all I can say is because I know the income expense is correct, because I went through all that, from what we had. The only thing I was worried about was flipping pledge. Sometimes because we change from a system where they would send me a check once a month to direct deposit, so I don't normally support these deposits until I actually get the money. So sometimes it's like a limbo, my money's in limbo, so to speak. I've charged it as limited income, but I haven't received it. So I'm just doing things as I know I have them received.
It's like accounts receivable.
Yeah, accounts receivable. You know, one of the things the state of Maryland, you know, when I'm charged on the state of Maryland, that wants me to act like a citizen, you know, and I get the money for it, you know, stuff.
What number did you say you wanted to change?
Open balance, I think.
The open balance for Murph Break is 3177906. Not 37.
So it's 3177906? So you're saying that 3777.96 is 3177.96?
Any other questions for Mr. Linder, Mr. Sims?
I need an explanation of how our closing balance is what there.
I understand that the 37 is a pipe. I haven't gotten any marks yet.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to estimate how much they deposit or given to us. But I have to go to know. So, I haven't received. I haven't received the month of March. And I haven't received Bank of America's statement for the month of March. So I'm trying to do an estimate of what comes. So, unless I'm really mixed up with what our income was, we also have a situation. March is usually a right point measure when we mean that most income coming in. All the people are tied up with the income. So it's trying to make that to what money we actually have.
Mr. Jones.
Is this that you're getting an amount for a year of pledge and it's going to be like 130 monthly, but it's different kind of for well, very big pledge.
Dinamon.
Sorry to get back to this again. I understand you're trying to estimate something quick and perfect, but that's quick. Even if it's an estimated figure, the balance and then still grand balance.
I agree, something's not right. Probably it'd be nice to have the previous month numbers, but it's really take a hard look at what it is.
Mr. Gassignaga.
In principle, if something is not right here, I can't vote to accept it, personally. I think that we should just...
May I suggest that the Treasury report be remanded until it is... Correct.
Yes, with the next one.
So. Is there any objection to that?
The next is
should we put online?
Yeah, should we put online and then let the
Treasury... Okay. Is there any objection to Dina Wad and Mr. Gassignaga's suggestion?
I have a question. I've never posted any of our treasures before it's on our website. Is it somewhere else? Is it public information? Is it a state or what?
Reports.
I understand.
Reports are. But everybody has to submit, all fiscalities have to submit your expenses, your income once a year.
In January, to the state.
Website, you can read what each said, committee said, who they received.
So this information is public no matter what?
It's taken out of here.
Yes.
Mr. Gassignaga.
No, I thought that you were saying that there's a problem with putting it online.
I'm just asking. I don't know.
Is there a problem with putting it online?
Hmm.
I'm just wondering if that should be instead of putting it online, emailing it to all of the things.
There you go.
So is there any objection to remanding this report until the executive board approves it, and then it'll be formally approved at the next central committee meeting? Hearing none, that will be the action that is taken. Thank you, Michael.
Okay, I just didn't understand what you just asked.
The report is going to be remanded until it is reconciled. The executive board will give a provisional reconciliation to it, and then at the next central committee meeting, the central committee will formally accept it after the executive board has.
Okay, so now it's not being sent to the central committee members or anything like that.
The executive board will and after that, the executive board will send it then to the central committee members.
Excellent.
Correct. Okay. Any other questions? Dina Bond.
In other words, if the numbers don't add up, if the executive committee, if the revised report, when the numbers do add up,
Any other questions about the treasurer's report? Okay, the chair's report. As of today, we have 67 dues-paying members of the party. A lot of renewals are out right now, so that should kick that number back to between 90 to 110, where it's been for the last couple of years.
And how many registered?
12,321 registered voters we now have. At this time last year, we had 9,970. We have added 3,511 registered voters in the last year alone, almost 300 a month. And I want to thank all those of you who have run to make that happen. I have consulted with Richard Winger, the guru of ballot access. That is the highest amount of registered voters ever in Maryland for a non-establishment party. It's not even close. We're the only one that's ever gotten over 10,000.
So we are indeed the third largest party in Maryland.
By at least 2,000 registered members, if not more. So, but what is really significant, again, is we have been adding new registered members, 250 to 300 a month, consistently. So we're definitely a growth pattern here. We had two statewide candidates get over 30,000 votes, Dina Mott and Gary Johnson. That is second and third only to Ralph Nader in 2000. And Dina Mott did it with a candidate with bottomless pockets, Rob Sabani. I couldn't watch a Ravens game without seeing the guy on there every 5 minutes. And Dean still was able to get 1.2% and 32,000 votes. That was tremendous. We had two candidates, Muir Boda and Paul Trugos, get over 11,000 votes in their races in New York House. We had two more get over 9,000. Leo Domowski and Nick Mueller got over 9,000 votes that came over within 10,000. Dr. Glaser, how many votes did we have overall? 72,000 or something like that? Last November?
Over 70,000.
Not prepared
for the answer.
Okay. I was just
over 70,000.
Very good. Thank you. As a party, in the last three general elections, we have run candidates in 22 of the last of the 24 U.S. House seats available, 91%. I spoke with Richard Winger out in San Francisco last night. The only states that can compete with us at that consistency is Michigan and Missouri. None of the other ones can. Now, let me say this. With all due respect to some of our friends from other states, our ballot access is a lot easier than theirs. Virginia, you have to get 1,500 signatures just to get on the ballot to run for the U.S. House. In Pennsylvania, it's even worse. West Virginia, you have to pay $1,700 as a filing fee. So Maryland is much better than most of the surrounding states except Delaware. Having said that, I am proud we have taken the ball and ran with the opportunity that we have had. There are states out in the West that have easier ballot access than we do and have not run consistent candidates as we have. So thank you to all those of you who have run. In addition, we had four candidates, I believe, that ran in the Baltimore City elections 2 years ago. We had eight in 2010. If any of you want to run or are thinking about it, you know, please get a hold of me. If I'm still the chair after today, my goal is to run another full slate for the U.S. House in 2014 and also at the local level. Mr. Gassignaga.
Yeah, besides the three candidates who are up here, we have other candidates here present.
Yes.
Please, guys, stand up.
Those of you who will run, please, Paul Drugos, Dina Mott, Gary Schneider, Leah DeMouse, Mike Linder, Scott Spencer, Darlene Nicholas, all of you people, Sean Quinn. Thank you to all those of you who have run for office. I am eternally grateful for you guys getting the message out. In addition to running for the U.S. House, like I said, there are also local races this year. One of the less fortunate things about Maryland is a lot of the municipal races are in Western Maryland or Eastern Shore. Here in Baltimore County, the Baltimore County Council is the lowest level that you can run. We just don't have any local elections. I wish we did. Next year, there will be races for the Board of Elections. I know, I'm pretty sure Arvin Vora is running for the Montgomery County Board of Education. So if somebody wants to, and Dave Sten ran in 2010 up in Cecil County. So if anyone wants to do that, please let me know. That's all I have to say right now. Does anybody have any questions or comments for me, for the chair's report?
Good job, Chair.
Thank you very much. I urge you, we're going to be running candidates next year. We're going to have, in addition to the U.S. House races, we will have a candidate for governor. To maintain our ballot access, we need to get 1% in that race. It has never been done. We have come close. To my knowledge, no third party in the state of Maryland has ever gotten 1% in the governor's race. I really want to get that. We were the first party to get 10,000 registered voters. Now I want to get that 1% so we can maintain our ballot access. We've already shown that statewide candidates such as Gary Johnson and Dina Maad can get that 1%. I really want to do this year. It takes money to do that. Please, I'm saving up some money right now. You know, not asking everybody to give a ton, but my goal next year is to give at least $1,000, half of that to the gubernatorial candidate, the other half to other candidates. I'm not asking you to save $1,000, but if you could save up $500, $10 a week, you know, the money helps. There's no doubt about it. Anybody have any questions? We've got
I
some
also have a comment concerning the last election. In which I served as the National campaign manager. I think that as a party, as an organization, we need to take a hard look, not just at the financial support, which was fairly adequate, but at the volunteer support that we gave or did not give to our various candidates. I was rather shocked. I mean, Dean was made it very clear that he was not going to run without adequate support, and that's what he got. I was shocked then when I was, you know, was working to try to piggyback on other candidates' campaigns, you know, and have the volunteers hand out literature or both. Almost everybody, with the exception of Paul here, said, it's just me, man. They're out there alone at the polls. Just that one guy. I can't believe, that something has to be done about that.
It would take some definite coordination. I was out there working for Dean and Leo out in my neighborhood. I know Tony has gotten out in the Dean Ahmad, you had a comment?
Yeah, first of all, I
want to
give credit to Bob. I
really
was really disappointed for a very long time. I can tell you of all the chairs we've ever had, including myself, no one has ever done a better job than the city of Canada.
Thank
so come and see me or send me an email or go through the name.
And let me say this, we have roughly about 100 dues-paying members, give or take 10 at any time. We have a pretty high participation rate, all things considered. We have about 30 to 40 people that are running for office, that are spending significant money, or that are volunteering and doing stuff. Bill Dizell wasn't able to come out today. I mean, we have a pretty high percentage, as state parties go, of activism. So, I mean, Eric Blitz. Eric worked harder during the campaign last year than I did. The Johnson Ringer should have been paying you.
Yeah.
They put you to the ringer.
No, my only point was that we're leading up to the election day. I got the feeling that a lot of people were working because I was the dean. And when I found out that did not trickle down to the other candidates, that kind of upset me.
I wish we could get, I would love to be able to get somebody at every polling place. I know it's not going to happen. There's over 1,100 in the state. I am a believer in a show of force. That would be great if we could get, I mean, I have people like John Olszewski who lives around here, and Andy Harris back in 2004 was out there with bad hair. These guys, they recognize when you're out there and doing stuff, and they'll come up to you and start talking to you. I was at Mark Grannis when one of his, he and Paul Drugo said, the one in Silver Spring at the church. And in the back, I wish I had a camera. Bill Parsons, who was Chris Van Hollen's chief of staff, had one of Mark's Lest We Can bumper stickers in his hand. And this is the guy Van Hollen talking, and he seeked out to talk to him. I mean, these guys appreciate people get out and get their hands dirty and do stuff. Mr. Spezio.
A couple of things, if I can say. When we're working the polls, some of us, I've noticed, want to stay on our own little cubicles and not approach voters. And we have got to get out of our shells and start to, you know, approach voters saying, hey, would you like a sample ballot, or a libertarian sample ballot? Would you, I hope, you know, maybe if we're just want to run on one candidate, hey, I hope you vote for my good friend, Lorenzo Gazzaniga, for whatever office or whatever.
That's another thing I've observed, that next time around, I'll let them start giving training to the people at the polls. It literally occurred to me that everyone would need training for that.
And keep in mind, the other two parties do have help. I mean, I live in Dundalk, and I was out there in front of Stricker Middle School. I was talking to some of the guys distributing literature. They're all steel workers that have been laid off. And you could just tell that, hey, you want some literature? Hey, you want some literature? You know, they were just collecting a check or whatever. They didn't want to beat them. It was a cold day, too. So, I mean, they have some built-in advantages. There's no doubt about it. So,
all I was going to say is show a little bit of enthusiasm, you know, when you're...
Okay.
I know it's kind of difficult. I know, you know, some of us need to get out of our shells. I was one of them.
One time when I was at a poll, the other worker that was there, I answered, she was getting paid. Her law firm sent her there to recommend some judge get elected. And I answered that was kind of illegal. I mean, she was actually getting paid by her law firm to be there to promote a judge who will then decide their case.
There's nothing new about that. I've run into people who work with the support of the city of Baltimore, right? Who actually, one guy actually told me, he said, I'm here because my boss told me to be here. They were campaigning for the mayor. This was a few years ago. That's illegal. But they do it all the time. This stuff all the time. This is done all the time, and there's no accountability. You know.
Anybody else have any questions?
Just to follow up on people working the polls and volunteering, I wasn't sure if there's a streamlined way that people can usually volunteer. When I sort of first achieved libertarian I was Googling for, I was looking for ways to volunteer for the campaign, and you know, I sent an email and stuff like that, and I just never heard back. And it would have been a shame that I lived 3 blocks from where there was a Ron Paul event or 3,000 people there. It was like, if I could tell them all who Arvin is, maybe that would help. But there's no, you know, button to be like, let me volunteer for this.
Sure. There are definitely ways that we can definitely improve. I'd like to tie this up so we have a lot of stuff to move. Mr. Jones.
For the number of polls, it sounds like we're about 1 in 10 that we need volunteers to at least. Wondering if there would be some way to get the names of the people. Like, I know all of the libertarians in Riverdale Park, they voted for each other. All three of them. And it would be nice to know if they maybe College Park or Hyattsville or New Delft and that stuff.
Yep.
And that we could be in contact with each other.
Mr. Brandis.
I just want to follow up on the point about, you know, volunteers need to be, there needs to be a system who's going to coordinate the volunteers. And that's a critical part that I think the first time that I ran, that's what I didn't have. I had a few people who were willing to volunteer for me, but I didn't feel right asking them to do things I wanted to do, and there's only so many hours a day for me. It's also important, I think, to have somebody that's coordinating that effort. The other thing I think that we really ought to work on is the yield. It's not just the drop-off between, like, you know, active party members and volunteers in the campaign. It's the drop-off between registered voters and active party members. You know, there aren't that many libertarians in Montgomery County, but there's between 1,000 and 1,500. If I could have had signs in 200 yards, that would have made a big difference, because it's a heck of a lot easier for me to drop off a sign in somebody's yard than it is for me to play chicken with the highway administration, you know, put them up at intersection.
I had
enough volunteers and enough money to get signs to a lot of libertarian yards, but not that many libertarians interested in even showing their affiliation during the, you know, during the election process. That's what I wish you could pick up.
Yeah. Last question, last comment, then I need to move on.
Again, because I haven't been able to do the statistics until I get these raw data to do it, it's extremely preliminary information. But the importance of being having a volunteer at the poll, based on the very preliminary data that I got about 400 more votes at the poll than somebody would get off of a single poll. But this is the most single important thing the volunteer can do, is spend one day at the poll, hanging out with the
Okay, very good. The program committee was held about a week or two ago, and unfortunately we don't have a projector here to show the changes. There were several recommended changes, 7 to be specific. I was running low on my jet ink, so I made 2 copies for each table for each of the changes. We will discuss the changes. I'm going to have Eric Blitz, who is the chair of the program committee meeting, discuss each of the changes. They can be debated. They cannot be amended. But they can be debated and voted on up or down. This is the state party program that is on our website, which defines, you know, how we would de-socialize the state. Mr. Dustin.
We cannot amend the changes. We can only approve the change or not approve
it. Correct. Up or down vote. That is it. Okay. I also would like to apologize. I didn't realize there was so much interest in this. As a habit, I have been tacking this meeting on at the end of an executive board meeting. In the future, if I am still the chair, I will call a special meeting for the program committee and make it amenable, such as on a Saturday or a weekend, where these can be discussed more in detail. I think these guys were up till 12:30. You know, I had to leave early talking about this stuff, so I do apologize for that. Mr. Blitz, or from there, if you would. Okay, the first one.
Okay, just so you all know, the basic approach to the subject was to try to streamline the information, get rid of the subparagraph, and combine like topics to make it all a bullet point system, and then also to change the language often to kind of active tense instead of old passive tense stuff. So most of it's cleanup. The first one is with respect to the opening paragraph. And all we are doing is changing the last sentence, one word. That sentence is, this program represents our first step towards restoring our freedom. We would like to replace restoring with expanding and protecting.
I'm one of the original people that wrote this, and actually I like this change, because restoring, it harkens back to something that a lot of people put out anyway. So I like this.
One of the other rationales was restoring is much more of a conservative method, whereas we wanted more action. Any other questions on that one? And so we vote on each one separately. So you want to go ahead and take the vote now?
Yeah. Does anybody else want to have any discussion on this? Correct. Okay.
Any other questions on this?
Question of the choice of expanding and protecting.
Sorry,
you can't amend. I know you can't amend. I was just wondering why that was.
What was the question?
The question is, why expanding before and protecting?
There was no particular rationale between
that.
Any other questions?
Mr. Linder, come on.
Sorry for Eric. That is not part of it.
Okay. So those that are looking at it, any language that's being removed is crossed out with a slash through, and any language that's being added is in brackets. So this first one is removing, restoring, adding, expanding, and protecting.
Okay, all those in favor of the change say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Done.
Next one is for education. We remove the first line, which is an opening stanza, and just, this is consistent with our point of making just bullet points. We,
discussion on this. All those in favor of the change, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Okay, now we're moving to number three is open and responsible government. Which is changed to just be state government. We get rid of, first we add a new one that says initiate comprehensive reform of Maryland's executive and legislative processes. You eliminate the preferences given to special interests. You will see that later on we have some sources. In another section, there was something about special interest that is being removed specific to developers, and we included this clause in here. There was some rearranging of sections that started to make sense. Strike creates and maintains small single member districts at the state and local level. This encourages politicians to account. Be accountable to their constituents for their actions. That actually gets moved down to the next bullet point. So we have that be established a nonpartisan redistricting process that stops politicians from choosing who votes for them. And then we add this language back in, create and maintain small single member districts to encourage politicians to be responsive to their constituents. And then the rest are all just little changes to language that you can see. Except we do have two new substantive ones on this state government section. You'll see those at the bottom. We felt that no party, unless we really get the laws we want, should go without having something in there that says stop the exclusionary ballot access rule. We're adding a section in there. And exclusionary ballot access rule offers a strong and vibrant democratic process. And it's the one thing we pitch about more often than just about anything. It should be in our platform. And eliminate unfunded mandates on local jurisdiction. Any questions on me?
Mr. Simmons.
Yeah. We actually had quite a bit of conversation about single member districts. And I initially didn't like the proposal, but I was supportive. I'm not opposed to multi-member districts. I'm opposed to the way in which Maryland uses it in the House of Delegates, which makes the majority party, the majority no matter what you do. But it's not the multi-member three votes, and that's a problem. And that can be addressed in the future, but it was, even though it was in my house and the commute was very short, it was in the interest of time. I know we were like, okay, well, you know what, we can address that later. So I am going to support the language, and we are going to, as we proceed with cleaning up or, I don't know, whatever the language is with the, on the Maryland program, we're going to re-press one item.
Any other discussion on this?
I'm supporting, I mean, I don't see how the same feelings are feared about the single member districts. That's one of the things that I would advocate to keep anyway.
Okay, very good. All those in favor of the change say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Okay, then number four is job and wealth creation without corporate welfare. We're changing that to just job and wealth creation. We add a new one that says reduce government spending and lower the burden on Maryland taxpayers. We get rid of the end public funding for stadiums, hotels, concert halls, and stop unfunded mandates, as well as promoting economic growth by restructuring the tax system in order to eliminate subsidies for special tax credits and businesses. We kind of combine those concepts with a new bullet point. It says we structure the tax system to encourage economic growth, eliminate subsidies and special tax breaks to businesses, and end public funding and financing for stadiums for adult companies. So we're really cleaning up that language by moving them away from two separate bullet points, putting them in one so they all fit. And then we got rid of a little bit of editorializing in a couple of these, and here's one of them. Where we say reform, instead of reforming, we change to reform licensing laws that are unfairly restrict and which protect both special interests. And leave it at that instead of allowing the creation of more jobs and business opportunities. We're trying to go with basic bullet points. The way the platform is generally used right now is on a website and a pamphlet that we hand out at fairs, no for candidates. So it's strictly marketed. I mean, no candidate has ever bound to be. So you're trying to make it clean and a marketing approach.
Right, really, right, with the marketing approach along with moving from kind of a more timely. So we didn't want to be too specific. We want some specificity in there, but what we don't want is like a specific item that now is no longer. You know, that was 10 years ago or something like that. So make it a little more timeless and make it a little bit more of a marketing structure, a features and benefits type of approach. And eliminating that part at the last bullet point of allowing creation of more jobs and business. We thought that was speculative. That's our belief that we would have that impact, but we thought it was speculative and that should
go off. Any other discussion on this one? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Number five.
Okay, the next one we used to say secure property rights, and now we just use it as a bullet point, property rights, and that's the only change. We're just changing the title of that. That's very simple. This is five property rights.
While you're changing the title of the subtitle.
Oh, we're changing it to the heading.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Number six.
Okay, now we go to land use, transportation, and the environment. Getting rid of that opening clause and moving it down. Instead of removing and eliminate all subsidies to developers, here's a subsidy change. The old one said in publicly funded infrastructure for new development. We wanted, that creates a lot of ambiguity between the respect to what we felt. Ambiguity because a lot of things can be viewed as subsidies, the roads as a subsidy. It was originally described to us as something that was involved in a campaign issue that got into the platform at one time. We'd rather just say eliminate way, in any instance, we can discuss what are those substances, why try to pick out the particular subset of substances we're given to us. More language cleanup. We got rid of revising zoning laws to allow the development of self-sufficient communities. Number one, libertarians are not and zoning in the first place. Why are we trying to include an incremental step in a platform like that? So, you know, we thought just get rid of that, get rid of something that could be viewed as a pro-zoning state. Then we have added the third, what becomes the fourth one, insists on maintaining local control of zoning decisions that we already had, and limit state zoning mandates on local jurisdiction. The big Plan Maryland is all about using the Maryland Office of Planning to limit the discretion of local jurisdiction. It's a big issue in the rural counties. And so if you're campaigning or doing anything, membership outreach, anything out in those counties, they like to hear that we're against efforts to centralize decision making at the state. So we added that.
Was there any discussion with the counties or the municipalities?
Well, we didn't want to be like specific on, we just said
sort of say local government.
Right, and then all of the, you know, the area, the D.C. metro area is filled with, you know, an even broader approach where even the counties don't really have direct control of the zoning.
I'm sorry, if you don't mind, Eric. You're talking about limited state zoning, that's actually right. So what you're saying is that this should really evolve down to the lowest possible board or whatever, all the way down to the homeowners association if we can. Okay, I would suggest since this is a work in progress, that's something we have to address.
Yeah, okay.
There are lots of, since I talked to zoning law in one area, I can tell you there's a lot of mandates now that have come through. It really started with, it's been around for a while, but Glenn Denning came along and really shifted with the Smart Growth Initiative, which has become, unfortunately, a model throughout 50 states, and they're heralded, Maryland's heralded in all the zoning circles. It's basically an approach to allow the state Maryland Office of Planning to control both where the money goes, but also to what the mandates are. So even granting a variance, the standards of zoning variances by local jurisdictions, a city like Riverdale, had to be changed to accommodate Smart Growth standards. They added these seven visions and all this other kind of aspirational stuff, but it impacts zoning decisions quite often. So
in the county stuff,
county, you've got critical areas, which is a mandate, it's a lot of different things.
I think we've made some improvements, but I always worry about us being too prescriptive in deciding things. For example, essentially we're endorsing zoning, we're just saying how we think it should be done. We're endorsing grant assessments, so we don't say how it should be done. I think some of these may end up making us look more like a special interest than a general interest. And somehow, even though I think this is an improvement over the old program, not enough to vote against it, but to think that it may be still too prescriptive.
I think it's a good point. We tried to eliminate a lot of that. We may not have gone far enough. You know, it looked like, from our perspective, we looked like we were maybe changing too much. We wanted to be a little bit. As Bob said, next year when we deal with this, we have a separate meeting, and I'd really encourage everybody to try and interest to come to that kind of meeting, because it's very hard, if not possible, in this scenario to really get into it. It's even harder to do it in a very short window. You need some time to sit down where you can just talk around the table about what works, what doesn't, what, you know. Because what we don't want to do is get to where we have the libertarian national thing where you're voting, you know, you're using Robert's Rules of Order to do every little change, and it just becomes a kind of a mess.
The other thing, in a way, the making the government's ability to do these things more efficient rather than giving anything more temporary, that might be different. Mm-hmm. And that, again, I'd have to think more about it.
So we add a new one, which is the fifth. End the bipartisan practice of raising the transportation fund for non-transportation projects, which increases travel gridlock. This is something that both parties have voted for in Maryland, to raise the trust fund, and then they raised the gas tax to
raise it some more.
They raised it some more. And this is a little system. It's almost like the old ringing the bell system for lobbyists, where and it's a hot issue right now, so it's an issue. So we wanted that in there. And we replaced the old transportation thing. And there, we removed this one along the lines of what you were just saying, a little bit too prescriptive and buying into government. Transportation systems and compact communities resulting in the above policies would increase. Two, it just wasn't bringing true to us in the military. Okay, last one. This is a substantive change by removing by faith and strict civil liability, just saying through civil liability. That's for environmental claims. Mm-hmm. You really, strict liability is a legal concept that this is not applicable to. Promote free market environmentalism instead of to solve problems, to promote conservation and environmental protection. Mm-hmm. Mike.
Eric, I guess I'm going to say that you have civil liability. Isn't there criminal liability too? Blue? So,
yeah, there is.
Wouldn't we like to
put them to raise at the next platform? We can't change it now.
There is a difference.
Yes, there is.
All right.
Next time. Most of the criminal mandates flow from the federal government.
Most.
Not all. But most. Okay, any
discussion on vote number 6? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
Vote number 7. Motion passes, by the way.
Okay, finally, full of safety, the next one.
I'm looking at what Bob Johnson gave to State Crime. Vote 7 is very key to the system. At least I would see it correct, I believe. Does land use tax base the firm with that?
That is a typo. It does not follow the fallback model.
Okay, but it should require the public safety.
Yes.
Sure.
I apologize. So, crime and public safety. A little bit of language cleanup in the second one. Stop any change to end use of assets in the forfeiture. We wanted it just a simple declarative end the drug war, then promote medical treatment rather than prison care. So we just wanted to for marketing purposes end the drug war. And then we get rid of another one of these, which Stu was pointing out, are kind of speculative statements. Removing stops the national drug war on drugs will reduce profit of the drug trade, resulting in decreased crime. We may believe that's going to be the case. I do believe that would be the case. But we don't want that in the kind of marketing platform. If you're going to do a whole pamphlet on the drug war and hand those out as fairs and things like that, we've got time to say that. But for the platform itself, we just want to end the drug war. We add a new clause in here. This is on the firearms stuff. Law-abiding citizens have a constitutional right to arm themselves to protect their own liberty. So we wanted that kind of simple declarative to start it off. The refuse to permit the carrying of firearms and the training and a background check, which is a shell issue. And we remove all the other stuff. This will allow this more kind of speculative language to allow the abiding citizens a constitutional right. Any questions on that? Yes.
When you take the most medical treatment, that invariably is going to be seized upon by government people. So that's the job that they have to do and they need to expand on. I think it's enough to decriminalize drug use and not take too much money out of it.
That language is is this sentence before the end of drug war is existing language. That was there. We didn't want to be, like I said, we felt we were changing maybe too much to stomach in one vote, so we kept that language. I would agree with you, but right now we can't. So we kept that.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? And
last
final, number eight.
Yearly, this is really marketing. This is just put it in order in the section. We got a request from someone to look at the order, and we agreed with their assertion that we should get jobs and wealth creation first, education next, crime and public safety, state government, property rights, and then land use transportation. Reordering the sections within the program. So that's all your. Any questions?
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Man, back in the day, we would have been going until 7 o'clock on this stuff. This is amazing.
We're not at the National Convention.
No, even back in some of the state ones.
I had a long night with Ms. Derek Cliff over there. One of the things we want to say, when we had this 2014 campaign, some of these things we do want to make specific. We now know that our governor is doing something with protecting children and whatever gun seizure, whatever he does, is passed by Monday night, would, I'd say, influence what this platform is. We want to refill whatever he passes or modify. So we are looking for sometimes several specific things. Same thing with, like, you know, with the end of drug war. Do we want medical marijuana bill, or do people have a very specific thing for 2014 that we could use that would get your vote? So same thing, like, do we want to do is waive the sales tax? So we talk about some things in general, but I do think sometimes we do need campaign specific platform too.
When we run as a referendum candidate, then we can reveal Martin O'Malley and all his clones and all that they do. The candidate will do that. The candidate will use this as a jumping start and create and flesh out in that campaign, you know, what needs to be done. That's what happens.
And let me say this too, if I may, just an aside. For those of you who are thinking about running for office next year, one of the best ways to start building your name recognition, getting issues out, are what Dr. Davis did, and a gentleman, Ben Braun in Georgia, who was elected as a libertarian to his county executive position. He just did it on letters to the editor. He would do one a month on a different issue, 250 words or less. They are hardcore on that. Get in, make your point, and get out. Letters to the editor are a great way to get your name out there. Get the media to start paying attention to you. So I heartily encourage that. Absolutely. Any other questions or comments? Dr. Glazer.
I'd just like to add that this is the program committee's report, but the reality is that Eric Bliss really is the one that came up with most of this, and I think the fact that he's a relative newcomer to our local party and his experience with the Gary Johnson campaign really helped to have a fresh looking.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for everything you've done. And like I said, if I'm still the chair next year, we will schedule a separate meeting to do this. I apologize for that. I treated this as an afterthought. There's clearly more interest in this, and would make it also a meeting more amenable to everyone's schedule. So very good. Okay, election of officers to the executive board. All seven positions are open. There's the chair, the vice chair, secretary, treasurer, and three at-large positions. Anyone who wants to serve, you will be expected to do something. So, we encourage people to run, and please do keep in mind we do want you will be doing stuff. Mr. Agostiniaga.
Yes. Are there any members on the board right now that do not wish to see?
Mr. Boris said he would step down if somebody else wanted to run.
So he would step down if somebody else wanted to run.
Correct.
So it's not as desperate, I got to run or else I'll die.
That is correct.
Okay. then my suggestion is my nominees are the board as is.
Okay. I am the chair. Mark Granis is the vice chair. Dr. Glazer is the secretary. Mr. Linder is the treasurer. Mr. Sims and Mr. Blitz are the current at-large members, as is Arvin Vora.
We nominate other people, or do they nominate?
We nominate ourselves.
Okay.
And you know, my name is Bob Johnson. I'm the chair. If you like the way things are going, I'm happy to continue as the chair. And if not, I won't be insulted. It's certainly up to you.
Ooh.
See, I'm your fellow Dundalkian. Come on.
I'm
going
to become Bob's bodyguard.
So,
has anyone expressed interest in taking up the seat?
I'd like to nominate Tim.
Okay.
Done a great job as the deputy director in Maryland from Jared Johnson's campaign, was in charge of a whole lot of data operations and knows a lot about Maryland politics. I mean, Bob and I just talked to him, and he just shocked us every time. He knows a lot about Maryland politics, so I think he'd be an asset to the team.
Okay.
I'd like to second the nomination.
Okay, great. Mr. Linder.
If I'm understanding what Mr. Wilson, there's something to be nominated to our floor.
Correct. Correct, and others can if you want. Formally, each of us, those of us who are on the board who still want, ought to nominate ourselves or someone else.
Well, I'm Mark Granis, and I stepped in as vice chair when Tanuja left. I'm happy to continue, but I guess I'm sort of in Arvin Vora territory as well. If somebody else really wants to be on the board, I think my initial value added here was largely that I was a lawyer. And now we got Eric Blitz on the board as also. So I might be expendable. If somebody else wants to run,
two lawyers are better than one.
Be happy to be on the board.
I'm Eric Blitz. Came in when Junior left and took over Mark's at-large position.
Okay. I nominate Dr. Glaser, one of the finest secretaries of all the state parties in the nation.
Yes, sir. Sure.
I will also nominate Michael Linder as the treasurer. Let me tell you something. Being a state party treasurer is more difficult than being a national party treasurer because you have to deal with two completely different sets of law.
We don't actually, or maybe the executive board
selects who is going to be. Right. It is true. But anyway, I nominate Mike Linder to continue serving.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you know someone who wants to be
treasurer, yeah,
I don't
make really well.
And I also nominate Mr. Sims, who is handling the member in the renewals and the sending out the information.
I'm not
going to
actually say anything about my nomination. I will say that I'm really kind of pleased with the number of inquiries that we continue to get. I'm sitting, I figured after the election things would we're still getting several like it's not, but they're coming in.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm
going to
second that nomination.
Okay, very. Any other nominations? We have seven right now. Mr. Gassaniaga.
Well, I want to change my initial proposal for electing everybody to replace Arvin for us.
You want to replace Arvin?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so right now we have myself, Mark Granis, Robert Glaser, Stu Sims, Mike Linder, Tim Sutton, and Eric Blitz. Are there any other nominations? Okay, we can elect this as a slate. We need a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the slate as is, as just stated, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Very good. Thank you very much. Okay. The floor is open for new business.
I'd like to just raise two things. First, we're very happy to have established the end of the term in Maryland.
Mr. Blitz, would you...
I
would like that under announcement, if I may, okay?
Both of my things are announcements.
Okay, new business as far as, does anybody have any motions to make? Hearing none, Dr. Glaser, do we have any unfinished business? I don't think we do. Okay.
I move to add an additional member on the executive committee for the
what's your motion again?
I believe what Paul is saying is that I don't know that it's appropriate for a motion, something that would have to be a bylaw amendment, to add a position to the executive committee for a young libertarian position.
In effect, an 8th seat.
Yeah.
That would require an amendment to the Constitution. Is that correct?
Yes.
But that motion can be made, and it takes a majority vote, and then we would have to do the
governing committee. After
right.
Yeah, that'd be a committee.
Well, if you want to propose a constitutional amendment, of course you can do that today.
Okay. Would you like either one of you state it more succinctly if you could?
Constitutional amendment to add
speak to the crowd, please.
Constitutional amendment to add an 8th executive board position for the zoning committee.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. Either one of you, Paul, since you was your idea, would you like to speak to the motion? You can make a motion, and then it has to, once direct, there's a recommendation of process that has to be published, but you have to get a majority vote, I believe, on this for the process to.
That's correct.
So I think the motion is in order.
Yes.
Okay, Paul, would you like to
speak? I just request a clarification. Have you given any thought to the definition of young libertarian? In other words, how old is too old?
Okay. Either one of you gentlemen, would you like to speak to your motion? Just speak to why you want this.
Well, obviously, I believe that if you don't invest time in a young libertarian committee, and we don't have representation on the board, then we wouldn't. I'm looking for more cohesion between the different units of everybody coming together, and that is going to be where our growth factor is going to mostly come from. You know, libertarian. I mean, I'm not even eligible to be part of it, so it's not like it's a personal self-serving thing. So, basically, it's an idea that I believe in. I think that we can move forward into, mostly into the college environment and the 20s, trying to get people motivated into the scene. And I think it's very important for them to have representation on the overall board so that the committee can all come together.
Okay. Mr. Gassiniaga.
I concur completely. One of my concerns is that when I look around the room, in general, well, we're a little warm in the suit, you know. And some of us even walk with a cane sometimes. So I do agree completely. And actually, not just college, but really the night. You know, I was really hoping that this young man that I invited to put the DVD together would make it, but he had death and family. I mean, this is the kind of thing we need. I totally agree. I think it's excellent.
Okay. Mr. Linder.
I think at this point in time, since that started the young parents moving way too fast, we need to make the chair not top number of the young parents as far better than trying to add the young parents. What if they don't? What if they disappear tomorrow? What do you do to the 8th seat? We simply need to keep, I think, the two groups separate, because young people are totally under the state central committee. And, you know, adding them as a chair, I mean, the seat, is to, what if we create another subgroup under the libertarian, you know, like you're talking about, people over 65, something like that, or, you know, libertarian farmers or something like that, you start adding them a seat. I think at this point in time, it's jumping ahead, just keep it at 7, let the young libertarians see how well they survive and go on from there.
Tina Mott.
Why don't you want to alternate between 12 and 20?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I want everyone who hasn't spoken to speak first before I get to Lorenzo. No, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's several problems with it. Not to conflict with maybe having an even number of negative people. But more to the point, I strongly believe we need more young people on the executive committee. Rather than have a seat reserved for the young libertarians,
And why don't we get the two young libertarians or three young libertarians to volunteer to be on the executive committee right now, and I'll nominate.
Okay. Yeah. Lorenzo.
Well, I understand Dean's concern, especially about the number eight. Concerning Mike's problem with it, we should get to the point where we think that we should be so happy that we have the problem as to what to do with libertarian farmers. You know, I would love to see that. So I don't have any problem with having to discuss this kind of thing, nor putting more people at the table. I understand Dean's concern, but I think it's a good idea. I don't see why we cannot try it. If the concerns and the problems that potentially can arise do arise, then we can deal with it. I don't think it's a big deal.
Mr. Jones.
Going along with Dean, that whatever the decision is and how many, it'd be an odd number.
Fine. Make it simple. That it works.
Dr. Lark, would you be so kind as to fill in temporarily as the chair so I may speak to this motion?
As long as there's no objection from the body.
I'm sorry.
The vice chair recognizes Bob Johnson.
I like this idea. I think it needs to be thought out, fleshed out a little better, and brought up at the next central committee meeting, which will probably be the picnic. I'm not against the idea. I do think it needs to be thought out a little more. I think both Dean Ahmad and Mike will bring up some good points. So I would vote against this if I had the choice to vote, only not towards the issue itself, the timing of it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm trying to prevent a prolonged discussion on this. I already expressed my view. I don't see why we could not. I don't think that it requires a bylaw change to allow a member of the Young Libertarians to kind of serve status with the executive committee until the next central committee meeting when this thing has completely hashed out.
If I'm a non-voting member.
All right.
Mr. Glazer.
Yeah. Actually, that's what I was going to suggest. I agree with Michael's comments. Not to rain on the young people's parade. We want to encourage them. But, hey, this organization literally just formed within the last month or two. To do a constitutional change is kind of a drastic thing to something that we're not 100% sure of for a long-term perspective. And what I was about to say is if this motion fails, I personally will propose at the next board meeting that we extend an open invitation to either the director or the Young Libertarians to come to any board meeting that they choose to, obviously at the board's request, and therefore to be aware of what's going on and to be able to make comments.
Okay.
Well, having set up the Young Libertarians and work on extending where we were, I wanted to explain a little bit. Right now, there's a director, a president, secretary, and two at-large members of their little board. Okay? The director is the only person that has to be appointed by the executive board of the party. So the Young Libertarians, which can include non-party members, get to vote on the other officers. But we had it set up so that the director is the link between the party and the Young Libertarians of Maryland, with the control point being the executive board, and for money reasons, because all of the money is not, this isn't a separately blanked subheading under the party, that all the money comes in to the party. When somebody writes their membership check, it's to the party, then it gets accounted for by Mike and sent for the Young Libertarians, but it's the party's property. So the reason I bring that up is if you're going to have somebody on the board themselves, well, now they are in a position of being both the monitor and on the board, at least the director. So, and it's not that we can't change the context of the standing over the order with the thing, but I think it takes a little bit of discussion. I think, right now, I would suggest is to call, or to him, I guess you made the motion, to consider an amendment to allow the director of the Young Libertarians in Maryland, which is current attorney, to sit as a, an observer status for 6 months until the next central committee meeting, following up on what Robert said. And that will give us time to hash out those details and see whether it makes more sense. And we can produce a report to everybody, send it to everybody on the central committee so everybody understands it. And that way, we deal with this in July or June, whatever that will be. We might be able to make it a little more.
Does the director want to be heard on this? Or?
But I think that's probably a good solution. Smaller, some kind of, you know, jumping around, figuring out how to incorporate you into the performance with that environment.
We have a bunch of young libertarians
here.
They might want to hear from that.
As I said, since I made the motion, I will amend my motion as Eric has stated, to have a 6 month period to allow the Young Libertarian to
serve as an observer.
Serve as an observer of the executive committee.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay.
Do I want to be heard?
No, I think there's a clear value to having affinity groups. I think it should be understood that they are affinity groups. They could stand for a lot of people to qualify. And not to balkanize it, but discrimination on the basis of age, it, as a practical matter, can be somewhat helpful. But I think it must be clear that these are just affinity groups, not separate groups, not people distant from the general party. And they could participate as individuals, just like everybody else in the party.
Mike?
I guess I have a problem with the amendment not being worded as an observer. I mean, the executive board can do this on its own by just making the person invited to guest. We have to make the motion to tell the director to do that.
Can any party member attend an executive committee meeting?
No.
At one point, they could.
They could.
In our constitution,
The only way you can include any party members in the executive committee is to go in the executive session.
Well,
there's really nothing in the Constitution or in Sturgis that prevents you from doing that. Sturgis has made it clear an executive board can conduct itself without other non-executive board members.
And this came up when we had somebody who I think was a Republican plant sniffing around trying to figure out who we were going to run against, Dutch Ruppersberger, a year and a half ago or something like that. So,
Well, as a point of order, that doesn't seem like choice that the Executive Committee still has the authority to invite.
Yeah, but I assume the Central Committee still has the authority to instruct the Executive Board to do that. And that's the motion.
Mike's point was, is this necessary? Is the Executive Committee reluctant to do it?
It's a motion. Let's discuss it. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of instructing the Executive Board to grant observer status to the Director of the Young Libertarians for the next 6 months, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Certainly. Reg Warren
assassinated. Talk to the fixer over there, Leo. Any other new business? Any other motions? Very good. Announcements, Mr. Blitz.
Well, you've already rained on my parade. Young Libertarians of Maryland. I would like to hit Young Libertarians of Maryland that are here. Please stand up. They've come to meetings. They've elected their provisional officers, and they're working now on how they're going to move forward. They're great. Good deal of money. Is a good start, and we really hope that it provides a link to the large cohort of 18 to 26-year-olds who are alienated or don't want to join in the political process directly. We want to give them that link to say, hey,
here's a way to join an organization, not necessarily part of it, but have a link to the part of it. It's kind of a bridge. Because, you know, a lot of the college students that I talk to during the campaign, oh, I don't like parties, I don't like politics, they would want to speak after another. We kind of break down that excuse, and we've had great meetings so far. They've been well attended. Aaron's doing a great job. Justin was elected, and Joel was elected. You were elected? Dave, sorry. And we've been on that. Okay. Next, volunteers. I put pamphlets on the back table there about our new volunteer program. I'm handling the volunteer coordination, and I took note of some of the comments that were made earlier about the need for candidates and campaigns. What we're doing is setting it up so that we have working groups for all the volunteers, and then each working group will have a director. And the current working groups are membership, social media and the website, fundraising, social events, data polling and research, and that's it for now. And then as we approach campaign season, we'll set up new working groups for those people who want to get a jump on the kind of exploratory phase of preparing for campaigns. And then we'll also be doing a lot of outreach to the potential candidates. We can help get some of those, because we've heard from quite a few people who said, I want to work on a campaign. Well, where were you 3 years ago? You know, that kind of issue. So what we'll do is get them involved. We want to do some fundraisers that are not just, you know, relying upon membership. Maybe entertainment event type of fundraisers, but something to generate funds. We've got a lot of things that we can be doing as a party. Mass mailings to those 12,000, how many ever?
321.
321 registered libertarians. I'm going to guess that at least 20% don't even know that there is a state affiliate party. That's not, we just, and somehow we have to bring that message to them. I'm not saying it hasn't been done before, but we need to do it again. And kind of effort. Data polling and research, I'm very interested in this because we're trying to set up a lot of information that can be used by the party, but also by the campaign, so that we can prepare information packages on, let's say, opposition research. It doesn't have to be going into digging into smart. What it can be is going and finding out what were all their records on voting on anything that has a libertarian issue.
Well, let's save the campaign a whole lot of effort
on what to do. So to do that for the top two Democrats and the top two Republicans, you've already got that for the governorship. You do that first. And so we'll kind of adjust what we do on data. We're doing data for membership, and we're doing data for the voters themselves. The big issue that I'm very interested in is tracking those people who have moved from the Republican and Democratic Party the independent status within the past. Those are targets. They may only get 10% of them, but the Republicans and Democrats are losing numbers in Maryland quickly. There's the independents and libertarians are growing. There's a sign-up sheet if you want to do it. We're also setting up an internet that is a website just for the working group, so that those people that are in the working group will go and be able to exchange documents, information, things like that. And I can answer any questions.
Two comments. First of all, I was waiting to hear outreach. Where's the outreach working?
Well, I guess that would be really in social media and the website, but that is really focused on outreach. But you're right.
There are other forms and stuff like that.
What's that?
Fair moves, parades, that kind of thing.
Well, I'm going to draw off the ball about volunteers to say, because that happens 4 times a year, maybe 5, and that's kind of, I view that as an all hands on deck type approach. I think we kind of send it out to all of the people that are involved as volunteers and say, hey, we're running a booth, can you come help?
Well, I would just like to recommend that the working group be set up for that, so we can have at least a minimum number, let's say 5 to 6 people that we can count on anytime we need to staff a booth, because that has been a problem in the past. And as Bill and Lorenzo and I get older and less, able to lift heavy loads, and literally, it becomes still more of a problem. So that was my first comment. My second comment is, a senior moment here, the mass mailing. The second mailing that we did for this campaign, we learned from the harrowing experience of using volunteers for a mass mailing, and I found a very good professional company that does this kind of thing, and I think the mail gets especially low postage rates because of it being a campaign season, so we might not get the same type of rate just for regular mailing, but it's still, exponentially, astronomically better to use an outfit like that than try to do it,
What's your name there?
I'll get to you later.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to you later. That's great.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of information we want to collect, not only for our volunteers working, but for our campaign. Mark was talking about bringing an economy of scale with respect to websites and other things, campaigns. We want to put together a whole package of information that we can deliver to campaigns, saying, here's the information, the best we've got right now. As we progress, we'll get better and better at it, and just be able to give them more. At least that's my goal.
And let me say this, thank you, Eric, and in collaboration with Eric said, I long believe that once the Libertarian Party starts getting about 5% across the board results, not because of a famous or rich candidate, but consistently on our principles getting 5% or more in federal and state races, we will eventually control the outcome of the election. The other two parties will have to send us off to deal with us. And I think that's how we will affect change, much more so than, say, getting someone elected president or Congress. And once we can tap in to the registered Libertarians and Independents, start bringing them along, that I think is our surest road to advancing the cause. Any other announcements?
Just some extra copies of the last year's newsletters in the back. Please take them, otherwise I'll have to take them back to home myself. Actually, I leave copies in doctor's offices when I happen to go there and stuff, and in a magazine rack. What are we going to do? Throw them away? You may as well let someone else throw them away. Also, I still have.
They're doing that with my book.
I have very nice MDLP caps that I had prepared for us last year for sale. They have a nice picture on the front, have a logo, and they have a website and phone number on the back. You need me to engage in the free enterprise system.
Also, Arvin Bohr and John J. Myers run the Libertarian Party National Facebook page. They have done an excellent job. We are now over 300,000 likes on there. We are competitive with the Republican and the Democrat parties. So be sure to check it out. They update it several times daily. They're doing a fantastic job with it. Oh, and I would be remiss to point out that Mark Granis has been elected to the Platform Committee of the National Party. Congratulations, Eric. We now have three people on the LNC. Mark's on the platform committee. Arvin is a member of the LNC, and Mr. Spencer is an alternate. So I think the Maryland Party is well represented. So thanks to all. Anything else before we close the meeting? Dr. Dinamon.
Would it be in order for me to present a proposed constitutional amendment?
Is there any objection?
No. I would like to propose that Section 5 of the Constitution be amended to include the following. Except when meeting in a closed executive session, the executive board may not exclude any central committee member from attending the hearing.
Is there a second?
Second.
Would you care to speak to your...
This is following up on the discussion that we just had. I've always been a strong believer in openness of the Libertarian Party. I think we need to set an example to the federal government. I think then, and the state government, the local government, and I think that when there is an occasion that is prior to the executive session, the executive committee has the authority to put itself in that state. Otherwise, I think our dues-paying active party members should have the right to attend the session for when they feel like that.
Okay. Anyone care to speak against it?
Could you please speak that out a little bit slower and louder, please?
Well, yes, actually, the proposal is this.
Mr. Linder.
I believe we kind of had this discussion before. I have to really think about it too. We conduct the executive board as like a closed meeting in a
public as a public site that people can come and listen to it, reject that. That's a committee member can't. They can't make comments or the executive board wants to take votes. They can't vote.
Correct.
So there's a difference between a closed meeting where only the 7 executive board members can be there. One thing, which is what I think the team is trying to prevent us.
Correct.
We do that, but very rarely, versus if we have an executive board meeting, then anybody can come, but they just can't participate in it.
I wouldn't say no. Not anybody. Floor. Anyone who is a central committee member can come.
Well, okay, but central committee member. But questions, can they be an active participant?
No.
And that's one way to make sure I'm on the same page. It's not executive board meeting. Anybody central committee can come and listen. To
sure. And I used to before I was on the executive board.
And that's what I'm saying. Constitutional. I don't see what he's differentiating between what's there right
it's,
now.
It's not really spelled out in the Constitution, Mr. Gottsman.
My understanding is. If I were attending as a listening person to the executive board meeting and I heard something and I wanted to make a comment on it, I'm still allowed to put my hand up and the committee may recognize it for a comment.
They may. They don't have to, but they may.
They don't have to. They may.
Correct.
And most of the time, I think that's correct. They may.
We want to prevent that knucklehead that was on that phone call that one time that was about running against Rupert Berger, basically.
Okay.
And a certain other former member of the party.
Except when meeting in a closed executive session, the executive board may not exclude any central committee member from attending to observe its deliberations.
To observe.
And regarding the question that was just asked, although as a courtesy, if someone raises their hand, the chair might recognize them. In fact, the proper way to do it is for you to ask one of the members of the executive committee to move that you be allowed to speak. Let them raise their hand rather than you raise your hand. Otherwise, it's asking too much of the chair to have to take that discretion.
Okay.
Don't even put that.
Oh, that's pretty tight.
Yeah.
Anyone want to speak out against this amendment? Okay, very good. All those in favor, say aye. Okay.
I haven't had time to read it yet.
I'm too busy typing it.
I'm just going to think it. I appreciate, and I'm the one who usually speaks in favor of openness at the meeting. I just don't think this is necessary.
Mr. Granis, would you come play chair again, please? Thank you.
I'd have studied if I'd known this was going to happen.
I think this is a good amendment because it clearly spells out, as I mentioned before, it is not spelled out in the Constitution. In the Sturgis Handbook of Rules, it does say, if I recall, that the executive board can shut out anyone who's not on the executive board in the meeting. So I think it is good to spell this out. We have had discussions several times on this issue with some of the people that have listened in or come to some of the meetings before that have been a problem, so we're not such a committee members necessarily.
Very
I like calling that.
Thank you.
I agree. I think what this amendment does, it clarifies and actually strengthens the position of the executive board because you have something very clear, laid down, and it actually strengthens it against somebody that might try to disrupt it, the way it's working.
And I'd just like to respond to the observation of the secretary. I, too, would have thought that this was unnecessary, except for the discussion we had earlier about whether someone from the Young Libertarians could observe. If they're essential, any member of the Young Libertarians who wants to be an observer at the Executive Committee can just become a member of the party and go to the Executive Committee meeting.
Hold on.
Does anyone else want to speak on the substance while they're figuring out which section we're trying to amend? Yeah.
I just believe that there's, if you wanted to have a central committee meeting, you'd have a central committee meeting. If you want an executive board, executive meeting, you'd have an executive meeting. Two separate entities, one you know, make these decisions. There's no reason for representation from us at those meetings.
Okay. Anyone else? I would entertain a motion to close debate, except I'm not sure that we're sure which. Yeah.
There's a friendly amendment from the secretary. He feels that it would be better to put this under section 6 as a new item K, and I have no objection to that.
Do we really want to do this on the fly, or do you want to make
it a
little
more? Well, we have
a
proposal, and the proposal, this body has to support the proposal before it gets submitted to a committee.
May the chair suggest that perhaps the proposal needn't specify a section?
I could be worded to say in the appropriate section.
Yeah.
All right. Then allow me friendly to set the friendly amount and say in the appropriate section.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion as amended? Great. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
Now we'll have to have a committee that will review it and submit a report.
Correct. Any other new business? Mr. Blitz, quickly, please.
Don't we really need to form that committee now?
Yeah, we need to form that committee.
According to the Constitution, we've got a chairman that you're already on.
Yeah.
One other member of the executive board. And then three volunteers from the state central committee who are not on the committee. So you need to move relatively quick.
Yeah.
You've got a recommendation for or against proposal in 8 days.
In 8 days. Normally, you would select a committee right now, and they would meet later during one of the breaks and leave their report.
Now, let me say this right now. It is 10 minutes of 5. We will be able to go later. There is no event scheduled up here. Dr. Lark will be speaking as soon as at the end of this central committee meeting. So I wanted to let those of you who have to leave early. Okay. Just want to let anyone know if you need to leave early, it is 10:05.
I'll volunteer.
If there's more than the number of volunteers, is there a limit on how many volunteers?
Yes, each such proposal should be investigated by a committee consisting of the chairman, one other member of the executive board, and at least 3 volunteers from the state central committee.
Okay. You're now on the executive
board? I am on the executive board.
All right.
No.
It's not the chair of the next executive committee. As long as we're still in session, he's still the chair.
Okay.
But there's only one member of the executive committee, right?
No, one other member of the executive committee. Stuart volunteered. And unless somebody else from the executive committee objects, he would be on it. And then Lorenzo has volunteered. I'll volunteer. If there are more volunteers than there are seats, then the central committee will have to resolve the issue. We need one more volunteer. Any central committee member?
I would suggest, in the interest of the others who would like to hear Dr. Lark speak, that we conduct that meeting after Dr. Lark speaks. Okay? Is there anything else before we adjourn the meeting? Hearing none, good. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
5 minutes and then Dr. Lark.
Thank you, Dr. Lark.